need me to tell you.
Okay, we're back to our second podcast, and we figured we're going to back up and talk about what leads someone to counseling or getting help, and realizing that sometimes we wait too late before we seek help. We're not really proactive, we're kind of reactive. So Sean's gonna just tell us a little bit about his journey on, like, I guess the dark times.
Yeah, the dark dark years. So like when I was younger, like just getting out of high school, I was very social. I had a decent sized group of friends. We spent a ton of time together. Everything was great. I was confident back then. Very much like a, I don't really care about your opinion attitude, and just kind of was myself.
So healthy.
Healthy, yeah. I like to think healthy. Like there wasn't too much ego there, but like it was a healthy amount of like just kind of I want to go through the world doing what I want to do and like enjoy my time here. And then I think with a bunch of factors, that world just gradually became smaller and smaller and smaller until like I couldn't breathe anymore. So like I like to use the phrase or the metaphor, like I was treading water and I didn't realize when I started to drown. So that was, there's a few things there. I got into a relationship. We kind of alluded to that in the earlier episode. And like that relationship was born out of a very strange time in my life. So there was a pregnancy scare with another partner. Turned out that the baby was not mine. But I was 20 years old and kind of scared. So like my brain went to, I need to get everything together. I need to be responsible. I need to settle down. And my ex was there and she was a lovely person. She was a great person. When we first met, everything was pretty good. As the pregnancy scare kind of disappeared, that's when I started to realize that like, ooh, did I just settle down because I was absolutely terrified of what my life was potentially going to become. More the anxiety of the unknown than the actual reality of the situation. Because like, it happens every day and you just buck up and you handle it and you move forward, right? So that was one factor. And then by that point, I had a really hard time getting out of that relationship already.
Okay, so let's back up. So when you found out, like, the baby wasn't yours, how did that affect you?
So initially, I'm not going to lie, like, as horrible as it is to say, like, I was super relieved.
So you were, like, on Maury Povich when they're, like,
yeah,
running.
Like, you were not the father, and I'm like, I knew it! Yeah, it's horrible to say because, like, all children are innocent and they deserve the best homes possible. But at the same time, like, I looked at it strictly from, I didn't like the idea of bringing a child directly into arguably, like, a broken home.
Right.
The relationship I had with that partner, like, it was a one-time thing. So, like, there wasn't really any trust or communication there. So I was really nervous about trying to feel that out. So initially there was a massive sigh of relief and like a stress being lifted because I was looking at, you know, lifestyle changes that I wasn't prepared mentally to make. I would have made them, but like I wasn't mature enough at that age really to really be able to do it.
Well, yeah, because I was trying to get back to the trust because then I'm thinking that would kind of like exude into your experience forward, right?
Yeah. So yeah, the trust wasn't really there. And then I was told throughout the entire pregnancy that like there was nobody else, 100% mine. So I accepted it very quickly because I was like, nobody's ever going to lie about this.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's a pretty serious thing to say. So like I went to doctor's appointments with her. I did everything I possibly could while starting a relationship with my ex. So it was a very interesting kind of time. I was very open and honest with my ex about everything that was going on. She knew the situation. And my only request was for a DNA test to be done like a month to 2 months after the baby was born. I didn't want to rush anything. I wanted her to have enough time to get home, get settled, all that stuff. She said she didn't want to pay for the DNA test. I said, not a problem. I'll pay for everything. Like, we just need to go together. That's pretty much it.
Right.
Test results came back negative, which was, like I said, like a massive sigh of relief.
But you had already...
I'd already spent, like, almost 6 weeks.
Yeah. Bonding.
Bonding. So I was with this child 4 to 5 days a week. I was going there at least 3 or 4 hours after work and, you know, just hanging out because, like, I wasn't going to not be there for the kid.
Right.
Child was also born on my 21. Yeah, my 21st birthday was when the child was born.
Wow.
So it was just a really weird, weird time. So initially those test results came back negative. Everything was just a big sigh of relief. It was like that, oh my God, you dodged a bullet scenario. I didn't realize the lasting effects of actually feeling like I lost a child.
Right. So like grief.
Grief, yeah. And I didn't grieve it. Like, I didn't grieve anything. Like, at that point, I was just like, let's just avoid all problems. We'll bury it deep enough. Nobody's ever going to know. Everything will be fine. You can just move forward as if nothing ever happened. And so on and so forth. But the problem is like, you can only sweep so much stuff under the rug. And eventually, the rug's going to hit the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So... that was one of the first catalysts to kind of my downward spiral.
Right.
There was that. There was also, I was spending a lot of time with friends at that point in time. I didn't realize it until later on in life. It was my way of avoiding being alone and avoiding being stuck with my own thoughts. Because I didn't like where I was going. I didn't like where I was mentally when I was alone with no distractions. So I was out a lot. That created a ton.
So you were numbing.
Oh, I was numbing. I was also drinking quite frequently. Very, very heavy smoker. Just anything and everything I could possibly do to, like, avoid dealing with anything. 6 months after that, my nephew passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
So my nephew was born at 28 weeks. He was very
mm-hmm.
premature. Or no, 24 weeks. And he made it in the NICU for 3 months before he passed away.
Oh,
so he grew, he was like 2 pounds when he was born. He got to about 8 or 9 pounds, but his lungs never developed. So eventually he passed away. So like I was hit like twice. I had, you know, two babies that were there that were loved that were now gone.
Right.
Again, didn't really truly grieved the situation as healthily as I should have. I just kind of avoided and
mm-hmm.
did what I had to do. So those were two early catalysts into the downward spiral. The other one was the longer the relationship went on, my partner decided to kind of pull back on the amount of socializing we were doing.
Okay.
So I wasn't going out as much. And I was spending a lot more time with her because she felt like I wasn't there, which is a fair statement to make, but like I didn't want to be there.
Right.
So it created some tension. The issue for me is that I suffer from social anxiety. So
tell people about that.
My social anxiety got really bad, and it got really bad right around that time point in my life where as soon as I removed myself from those situations, I found it very difficult to get back into them. So kind of the less socializing I did, the harder it was to socialize. And like my world just slowly became smaller and smaller and smaller until really it was only my immediate family and my partner. I remember like 2 years ago, I was going to a close friend's, and I mean, I've been friends with these guys for 10, 15 years. There's like six of us that were going to play poker one night, like $5 game, like just have fun, hang out. And I stopped in a parking lot 2 minutes away from my friend's house and had a 15 minute panic attack before I showed up. And this is to hang out with some of the people that I love most in the world.
And what, okay, describe a panic attack.
Personally, I get like a really gnarly feeling in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
So, chest tightens up. As soon as my chest feels like it tightens up, I become incredibly aware of my breathing and how fast my heart is going. Once my heart rate gets to a certain point, like I can't ignore it anymore, and then that progressively builds bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
Like I just fixate on it. I can't breathe. I can't think. I can hardly form sentences. It's not a pleasant thing, and it's very hard for me to snap out of them. So like, I've learned through the years how to do it. I do a lot of breathing techniques to get that heart rate to drop down. So as soon as I can get the heart rate down, I can kind of take back control. But the issue is I feel absolutely exhausted after, mentally and physically.
Right.
Also, I'll have heightened just general anxiety for the rest of the day. So I start getting anxiety about literally getting anxiety. So it just kind of snowballs. So it's very difficult to kind of get through that. Like I like the only reset I really have is like I need to go to sleep is the number one. I learned at a young age when my anxiety was there but not dominant in my life by any means that alcohol took that away. So not really a good place for a young adult, especially somebody that was avoiding some of the stuff that we'd already discussed about, to find out that, oh, if you want to go out and socialize, like, you better drink. So I was drinking a decent amount anytime I was out with friends, and it just, yeah, it wasn't necessarily the best time. I looked at it like I was having a lot of fun, but I can look at it now from mature eyes and realize it was just absolute avoidance. So those were some of the early catalysts, really, and then it just slowly went from level to level to level. So I kind of got used to that baseline level of depression and that baseline level of social anxiety, and that just became my everyday life. That was my new normal.
Right.
So like, it's amazing what human beings are capable of adjusting to. The issue is every now and then something would trigger me and I would drop down a level. So it would get a little bit darker, a little bit deeper, and I would just accept it and be like, well, in a little bit you'll get used to this. This is how life goes. You're just gonna get beaten down, chewed up, and like spit out. Like, this is it. And it got down to a point where before I decided to go to therapy, I had numerous occasions where I was driving home actually thinking about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I would ever actively act on. Like, I just can't. I would never put my parents in that position. I personally wouldn't be able to do it. But the fact that those thoughts were uncontrollably creeping into my psyche, that was enough for me to be like, okay, like, you got to deal with some stuff. Like, we got to talk some stuff through, because this is not how to live life. You can't do this anymore. So that's kind of like the very basic outline, I guess you could say, of some stuff. Is there anything that we've discussed that I've kind of skimmed over?
No, I just think that's sort of like where you thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. Like, because that, I think, was months before you actually came.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, like, I know the first time I thought about therapy was easily, like, 3 or 4 years probably before I decided to come. And, like, I had any excuse in the book. Like, even, I had your phone number for, like, a month and a half, I think, before I actually made the phone call. Like, the procrastination on actually getting healthy is unbelievable, especially when you're in that state of mind.
Right.
So, everything is able to be pushed to a later date. Any excuse at all to not leave the house, any excuse to not take care of yourself, like,
and the social anxiety, right? So like, it's not to take away from your story, but I think it's very timely because that's a lot of what people are going to go through right now or are going through. The anticipation of us coming out of this pandemic and September looking a lot, the fall looking a lot different than it does now. And people aren't ready. It just seems like they got used to, as you said, this is their new normal. So they got used to this bubble of people that they socialize with, or some people haven't even socialized. And, you know, I just think we're heading into a lot, even with young children, going back to school after being off for over a year. And, people are going, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I don't know. I think it's going to be very awkward, I think.
I a firm believer in the fact that social skills are, it's a learned behavior, and it's also a behavior that takes a lot of time, effort, and practice to maintain.
Yeah.
So coming from me, like, I lost that confidence in social settings, and a lot of that came from potentially like an identity crisis. I was going through a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't feel like the person I was putting out in the world was genuine anymore. And that led me down a very gnarly spiral. In this situation, I think people are so cooped up at home and they've lost that kind of natural social dynamic that they were in so prevalently leading up to the pandemic. That's going to be very difficult for the average person to kind of regain those skills. Hopefully it comes back relatively easily for a lot of people, but I think social anxiety is going to go through the roof.
Well, especially considering now, you know, like these Zoom meetings, which everyone is so tired of. And however, but realizing that, like, work, a lot of work can be just compacted in a short amount of time because you spend a lot of time just talking.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't have the privilege of having any knowledge whatsoever of being inside an office building. I know for my workforce, like, there hasn't really been that massive of a change. I mean, there's masks and stuff like that that we have to wear once in a while, depending on circumstances. But, yeah, I still see a lot of people are kind of getting used to the idea that their world has kind of shrunk. And that's a really scary place to be, because as soon as you limit yourself like that, and as soon as you get used to those limitations, it's very difficult to start pushing the envelope and coming back. It's very easy to get there, very difficult to come back.
But I think there's two forces what you're talking about. So you said that you socialized, but you drank to socialize.
Yes.
And there's two sides of that coin, because you can drink to socialize, yes, but then you do realize sometimes it's just the people. Like, you know?
Oh, I agree.
Like, I hate small talk, so
yeah,
I have to be around people that are sort of like-minded, that I'm going to have a intelligent conversation or debate or whatever we're talking about, rather than just a load of nonsense and, you know, irrelevant information.
I agree completely. I think one thing this pandemic has hopefully taught the vast majority of people is that it's okay to cut out any negativity they have in life.
Yeah.
May that be, you know, a friend that's just there because they're convenient, relevant, and...
Or length of time.
Yeah, like, you guys have been friends for 10 years. You could have nothing left in common, and that friendship is just there
out
of duty and honor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with moving on from that and finding new like-minded people and expanding yourself, because I feel like the only way that we can really grow as a culture is to really have those intense conversations and really attempt to learn and grow from each other and, you know, understand different points of view. But those skills are seriously, seriously dwindling. I know for myself, like, I've started, especially in the last 6 months, anytime that I've gone out, I mean, within COVID restrictions,
right,
obviously, I've made a point not to drink. And I do that not necessarily because I think I have a drinking problem. It's more so because I want to learn how to be social again. I want to learn how to be in a situation like that, feel confident and comfortable within my own skin without being numbed in any way. And the first time I did it, I went to a fire, and it was with my girlfriend, and there was six people there. I believe there's six people there. It was a little over our numbers, but six people there that I'd never met in my life. So the idea for me to go there completely sober was daunting. I was borderline, like, I had sweaty hands when I walked in the door, but I did it.
There you go.
And, like, and I found out that, like, three of us had grown up with incredibly similar, like, niche music tastes, and, like, we spent all night bonding over music, and I still keep in touch with these people. They're phenomenal human beings. So it's just a really interesting dynamic that, like, you need to meet new people, you need to expand yourself, and any negativity that you're holding on to, may it be your job, your work for, or your personal lives, anything like that, like, this is the time. Like, you have nothing but time to
change
anything.
Exactly. So, what we're going to do, we're going to head out, but Sean's going to, for like the very first time, try this VR therapy, and then he can report next week on what he got from it. There's actually one for social anxiety.
Yeah, I'm curious about that.
So am I.
I'll be hanging out in the living room with sweaty palms.
All right. So, again, thanks for listening. And, yeah, we'll resume next week and figure out what the topic. Well, we're going through the dark days, but we're coming out. There's light at the end of the tunnel. So, talk to you next week.